V-Series VTEC. And I was like, what the fuck's that? Some dude's ordering like 5,000 titanium retainers, small diameter, like 5.5. And the dude was in Irvine. I call up there. I'm like, who's ordering stuff from Crower? Eddie Kim. And I'm like, Eddie, what engines are these going in? I mean, 5,000 retainers, pretty impressive. He's like, oh, it's a B-Series VTEC. Overhead cam, you know, and 3 lobes per valve, you know, and he hits a VTEC and it crosses over. And I'm like, whoa. My wife had an Integra LS with a B18A. And so one day I drove her car to work and we pulled the valve cover off and took the cams out and we're checking them out. Oh, this is non-VTEC. Okay. And so those are the first cams we did. We did B-Series non-VTEC. That was probably 95. Man, it blew up. You know, it was like, we were killing it on rods. We were killing it on springs and retainers. And then we're like, what's next? Oh, we should do some cams.
Welcome back to the E-Suite Race Podcast. Today we're here with pretty big name, Brian Crower from BC or Run BC. He's a manufacturer of cranks, cams, and all engine internal stuff. And we're also here to also make a big announcement of his new partnership with another industry giant, CP.
CP Carrillo.
CP Carrillo. Let's talk about that. Like, that's pretty brand new. We launched, you guys did the release on Thursday.
Yeah, we've been working on this for quite a while. Met with Snake and Cindy and Richard Batchelor at Carrillo and Don at CP, and what we're trying to do is, you know, there's three things that this industry, you know, needs, and it's reliability, affordability, and availability. And probably availability probably goes ahead of
everything.
Affordability.
Else?
No, reliability is number one. Yeah. You sell a shitty part and you're not going to be around for a while. But so we were talking, just shooting the shit. I mean, we were a long time, CP's our piston brand. We were spitballing, trying to come up with some high tier rods and some cranks and, you know, just bring to market some affordability. Just the price point is, you know, inflation and prices are just going up. And, you know, we're trying to do something a little different and come out with something where instead of prices going up, you know, they're going to come down. And we have the, you know, Carrillo quality and CP quality and all their QC and their CMMs. And, you know, it made a lot of sense for us to partner with them. I got a lot of people asking me, why don't you just do it? A lot of it was entering the domestic market. And, you know, I had a lot of, like, you know, I mean, came from Crower Cams and that was their sandbox and I didn't want to play in it. But the LS market's big, the small block market's big, the big block market's big. And, you know, it's kind of like,
felt like you were missing.
I've been away from that scene for 20 years. And so I want a little bit of credibility, some muscle in the industry and their clout. And so, like I said, we just kind of worked out a handshake deal with Snake and, you know,
they made it happen.
They were kind enough to give me a 20x10 space in their booth, and you know, as far as the feedback and the response at the show, I had this expectation for the show, and we're way above that, you know. So it's really good 2 days so far. We got today, and everybody's just stoked on it, you know. And that's what you want. You want a quality part at a good price,
yeah.
You know, and have it in stock.
Yep. And you guys are able to meet all those,
right?
So let's take a step back and talk about Crower. You were, you know, you've been in this game literally your whole life.
Shipping,
you guys are born and raised,
and you know, just moved up the ranks, you want me to talk about the art?
So starting in Crower, what, besides obviously when you're 12 years old, you're just doing shipping. What were some of your responsibilities after you got into, like, you know,
life? Basically, you know, you graduate high school, and then my mom wanted me to get a degree. We're in San Diego, so I enrolled in San Diego State, got my GE out of the way, and then it's kind of like, what do you want to do when you grow up, you know? And I didn't know, and so I just went back down to work at the shop, Crower, and, you know, kind of feel my way out, and Crower cams, you know? So I'm telling my dad, hey, I want to be a cam grinder. He's like, no, you don't. I was like, yeah, I do. It's Crower cams. You know, I want to contribute. I want to be out there in the machine shop, right? And he's like, all right, put me out on one of those grinders for 8 hours. I was bored out of my mind. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. And, you know, I mean, I thrive on chaos. You know, if things are going smooth,
Something
I'm
right.
bored, you know. I need some juice to you know, some shit happening to get me going. And so, you know, I was just like, all right, machining's not my gig, but my dad's like, you know, we just called it an ad guy. You know, and back then it was all print and, you know, magazines were big and you know, Crower runs ads and Hot Rod and all this
shit.
Yeah,
all the different magazines and
right.
stuff like
and
that.
So, you know, so they had a guy my dad's like, hey, I don't got time to, you know, work on ads, but you do it. But I mean, I grew up San Diego. I grew up just playing sports, chasing chicks, you know, going to TJ, having a good time. I wasn't a car guy. So I kind of started there, and I put my office down with the sales guys so I could get the lingo and hear all the, you know, mm-hmm. just, you know, get up to speed. And I kept hearing him say, like, we don't make anything for rice rockets. I kept hearing that. Rice burners. They were really negative.
So this is probably like
This is early 90s. Early 90s. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I mean, it probably went on for about a year. But then all of a sudden I look and some dude's ordering like 5,000 titanium retainers, small diameter, like 5.5, not a domestic, right? Mm-hmm.
Just ordering the part.
Just ordering the, you know, like custom, but in bulk, right? I'm like, and the dude was in Irvine area.
Okay, so still in Cali.
And so I look and I'm like, Dynamic Autosports.
And look them up.
I call up there. I'm like, hey, who's ordering stuff from Crower? And, oh, it's Eddie Kim.
Okay.
OG. And so I said, hey, can I talk to Eddie? And I'm like, Eddie, what's going on? What engines are these going in? I mean, 5,000 retainers, pretty impressive.
It's a lot.
He's like, oh, it's a B-Series VTEC. And I was like, what the fuck's that? Overhead cam, you know, and three lobes per valve, yeah. And he hits a VTEC and it crosses over. And I'm like, whoa.
The fuck is this?
That's blowing my mind because, you know, pushrod engine is one cam, pushrods, you know, none of this VVT bullshit and all that. And so I was like, wow. So I go back and Crower was where all the salvage yards were, mm-hmm. you know, all the, you know, junk yards.
Okay.
So one summer I was kind of fucking off and my dad said, this is when I was about 16. He's like, you're going to go work at a salvage yard. And so that was kind of my introduction to engines. Like they would say, hey, go out and pull a, you know, this from this car,
whatever,
this
yeah.
engine, you know, so I'm out there wrenching, you know, trying to avoid the rattlesnakes and shit. But the problem was that, so my dad put me there cause I was having too much fun, you know, but these dudes are, you know, like, hey, noon, let's go beer time.
Yep.
You know, I'm like, damn. All
right. Beer time is
good.
You
know, so my dad, and then he was picking me up and he picks me up, you know, and I'm kind of
tuned up,
I'm tuned up. Right. And so he's like, nah, this isn't going to work. But it gave me like 3 or 4 months to kind of, you know, get my hands dirty and wrench. And so that didn't work out for, you know, my dad's picking me up and I'm tuned up. But it got me going, got my hands dirty. And so.
Did you actually go find a motor?
So I went, you know, back to the junkyard I worked at. And I'm like, hey, what chassis is a B16A in? And the guy gets on the.
Looks it up.
And he says, oh, it's a Del Sol, I think was the.
Yep, Del Sol's they have.
And I'm like, is there, you have a wrecked one here? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, can I get the engine? Yeah, fuck yeah. I mean, another domestic guy is like, I don't want to deal with that fucking Asian bullshit, you know? I'm like, okay. So we take it back to the shop. We fucking tear it apart, start looking at it. Oh, there's Eddie's retainers, you know? And, oh, these are these rods. And in the meantime, Eddie was ordering rods for B-Series, you know, B-16A, B-18C, and then, you know, the non-VTEC. And my wife my wife had an Integra LS with a B18A. And so one day I drove her car to work and we pulled the valve cover off and, you know, took the cams out and we're checking them out. Oh, this is non-VTEC. Okay. And so those are the first cams we did. We did B-Series, non-VTEC.
And I was still with...
So I always have a soft spot for the non-VTEC B-Series.
So and that was still with Crower?
Still with Crower.
Okay.
And so... You know, I talked to Eddie and I was like, hey, I want to get more into this. Can you like give me all the
specs, just what you
give
need?
Give me what you know, man. You know, I'll take care of you. Don't worry. You know, you put me into this thing. So that was probably 95. And then, man, it blew up. You know, it was like we were killing it on rods. We were killing it on springs and retainers. And then we're like, what's next? Oh, we should do some cams. You know, but none of the foundries here would deal with, you know,
new stuff,
and, you know, oh, it's not a Chevy,
they don't
Ford
deal.
Pass. So we're kind of looking around, and out of the blue, this dude shows up, and he's from Turkey. And I'm like, hey, do you do Chilcast cores? Can you do Chilcast cores? He's like, that's our specialty.
Mm.
I'm like, well, shit. I give him a sample, and or samples, Twin Cam, and we get the samples back. We first did a billet core, and a billet core on that Honda, whatever magic pad that is, we still don't know. It's unobtainium, whatever. But that pad, I mean, we have a Spintron. We wore out the lobe in like 15 seconds.
Wow.
You know, and so we're like, okay, this is some kind of steel pad. Don't know exactly what it is, but a steel camcorder won't work. We need Chilcast. So we had to buy the tooling. I mean, this is ground zero.
Yeah.
You know, these cams. Nobody had nothing, you know? So this is whole, like, I'm trying to make things work. I mean, we had the Junes, the HKSs, the Spoons, but, you know, it was just, the Japanese manufacturer are very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the old 264, 272 spec, it doesn't really exist. They just kind of created these numbers out of thin air. And so we end up getting these B-series camcores and all of a sudden, you know, they're selling, and we're selling springs, we're selling retainers. We start looking into valves, we're selling rods. Well, what's the next step? Oh, we need some cranks, you know, and we, you know, get into the crank game. And then, you know, it morphed into, you know, I don't know the exact pecking order, but I think 2J was next, and then 4G63, and then SR20, and then Subaru, and then that was probably the...
So you basically started the whole sport compact
I want to give those JDM companies credit, because, you know, we were riffing off some of what they were doing, and you know, it wasn't like completely zero.
Well, I mean, like on the U.S. side.
But yeah, we were the first to bring to market on the U.S. side. You know, the first domestic company to come into the JDM market. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And man, it blew up. You know, and everything's going good, and everybody's happy. It's 30% of the sales, and, you know, life's good, and all of a sudden I get, you know, my dad's like, hey, we need to talk to you. And I go in, and it's my dad and my aunt. And the dynamic down there is my aunt was my dad's older sister, but she controlled the money. So whoever controls the money kind of wins. And,
So
they're all, hey, you know, we're not feeling this market. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, it's kind of, and we would go to the show. We would go to the PRI shows, and my dad was like, yeah, you can bring that stuff, but you got to hide it. We can't let the domestic guys see that we're dabbling in this overhead cam market.
Stuff,
and I was like a drug dealer, like, hey, you know, hey, come here.
Look at it on the side.
Check out these cams. They were literally under a
cover
in a cabinet, in a box,
you know, or something.
And I have to get them out and look at them. And so, you know, it was kind of odd, but that was what they wanted to do. And that's what we did. But it grew, you know, and then they come to me and they're like, yeah, it's hurting our credibility in the V8 market. And, you know, there's a lot of inventory, you know, not bad inventory, but imagine a company that's been, I mean, in the 90s, so they started in 55, so let's say 50 years, right?
Yeah.
One cam per engine, pushrod motor, one cam. Here comes Brian, twin cam Hondas, twin cam 2Js,
pairs.
Four cam Subarus.
Everything's pairs, yeah.
They're
yeah.
selling, you know, but it ballooned up the raw material costs,
yeah.
You know, and so that was all they were kind of looking at. That and the you know, we're hurting our credibility
in the muscle market.
You know, in the V8 market. So my dad's like, yeah, we're gonna cut it. And I'm like, really? He's like, that, don't worry, you got the right last name, you know. And I was doing advertising, and we did all the catalog we were the first to do a catalog digitally in the market.
Okay.
I mean, that was back in
that was big,
you know,
back then.
So anyway, I don't want to. I mean, we can bounce around, but actually, I said we want to shit can the import market, and I'm like, so I go home to my wife, and she's all, "Why don't you start your own business?" And I'm like, I jump back. I'm like, cheat on the family? I'm, you know, want to smack her? You know, no, I'm, you know,
can't
no,
do that.
I'm a Crower, you know, I'm not going to split off. And there was some more just stuff
internal
going on.
Internal
and,
drama,
you know,
and stuff
I'm,
like
you
that.
Know, I was kind of pissed. I was really pissed off on that, and there was some other stuff. And So I don't know, maybe 6 months, I go back to her and I was like, how would we do this? And she's like, we'll just pull equity out of the house. You just start it out of your garage. I'm like, all right.
Let's make it happen.
Let's do it. You know, and I didn't really think it all through. Like, I mean, this is sink or swim, you know, and I got a mortgage and I had a kid on the way and I already had a kid and you know, it's kind of like,
it's kind of like starting from,
and you know, this is just a lot of stuff, you know, it was hard on me, you know, cause I'm leaving and my dad's pissed, you know, well, the one thing I'll say is I went in and I remember giving him my key in his office and I said, hey, here's my key. I quit. You know, I can't handle all this stuff. And he's like, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Figure it out.
He's all, you'll be back. And that was
that set
motivation
you off, right?
I wanted to just, I needed that to just
the proof
be like,
to yourself.
All right,
the proof to yourself.
I'm going
to,
yeah, exactly. You know, and I had a little chip on my shoulder, you know, and so I grinded, man. I'm in my garage. I'm banging out, you know, we're going to do this and this and, you know, and talking to suppliers and, you know, and a lot of, you know, luckily a lot of the Crower suppliers, you know, they I remember I went up to see Snake and Barry Calvert at CP and I was like, hey, you know, I'm going to go off on my own. I'm going to do this JDM side. And, you know, I just don't have the money for the big buy-in. But when they left JE, they came down to Crower and were like, hey, if we leave, will you, cause we did all the stroker kits. And so we used Ross and JE and Barry and Snake are like, hey, you know, if we start our own gig, will you go with us? And I was like, absolutely. You guys are my guys, you know?
Yeah.
And so we had that history. And so sure enough, I go up there and
now
they're
the
like,
tables
yeah.
turned a little
they're like,
bit.
Yeah, man, for yeah. you. Absolutely.
So it's the
and
same
so
thing.
That, and then, you know, ARP, I was good friends with Chris Raschke, who sadly passed away at Bonneville this year. And this is my pin, memory of him. He's a rock star, you know? So it was cool. I had a lot of support. I didn't have to outlay a lot of capital and I could make shit happen.
And so, you were able to leverage your relationships basically.
Right. And so, you know, we were off and running remember, the big wigs, they didn't want to do it. They told me not to do it. Well, as soon as I leave, they want to do it. You know, they're going to crush me, right? And so they bring in this one guy who was going to some shows with me, they bring in this one guy to, you know, get Brian, and he's, you know, trying, but their heart wasn't in it. If your heart's not in it, it's, you
only
can,
know so much, and you're not going to,
it's
not going to grow,
right?
Yeah.
If you half-ass it, you're only going to go so far. But that dude was, you know, he was a good worker. I'd take him to the shows and he'd be like, this is back in my drinking days. He's like, Brian, you go have beers. I'll set up the whole booth. And I'm like, right on, you know, this guy's a rock star. So a year later, I call him and I'm like, hey, you want to come work for me? He's like, yeah. So then we had two dudes in my garage. We kept grinding. And then my wife got pregnant with our third child. And we're like, okay, now we need a building, you know? So get a building and now we're off and running big time. And that guy was Dustin, and Dustin's my right-hand man, man.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, he is, we wouldn't be where we're at without that dude. And so I appreciate him coming with us. And, you know, I told him, hey man, I will take care of you. And, you know, let's just tackle this thing. And so, you know, we're off and running and we got a building and, you know, sales are growing. And then like 2008 hits or nine, you know, and
the recession,
the economy crashes. I'm like, oh my God, bad timing. But I kind of thought to myself, if we can weather this, if we can ride
through it,
did we weather it, we grew.
Mm-hmm.
We grew during that time because we came in with a different mindset. We weren't like, okay, the cost is this, and we're going to charge this. We wanted to be fair, you know? And you know, I didn't have a lot of overhead. We had a building now, we had inventory, but I didn't want to be a whore, like whore out shit, but I wanted it. There's no reason why you had to spend $2,500 on a pair of 2J cams that, you don't need 1,000% margin. And so I wanted to come in with fairness to the consumer, mm-hmm. you know, and that was our approach and it worked, you know? And so, yeah.
Now on the business side, did you go to school for business?
I was an art major. So back to where I said I got my G and went down to work at Crower. We had the ad guy, right? But he's doing it old school, litho, cutting it with an, I mean, dating myself, but cutting pictures out with litho, with an X-Acto knife, and laying in copy. You know, the computer, the Mac did not exist at that moment, but it did 2 years ago or 2 years later. And I wasn't a geek, but I got into DOS. I got into early Excel.
You were into it a little bit.
I wasn't a nerd, but the computers fascinated, the power of the computers fascinated me. And so I start looking into graphic design, you know, and doing the ads and, you know, that kind of thing. And, we need this Macintosh. We need this scanner. We need this monitor. We need this digital camera. Or they didn't have digital cameras yet, but we need this camera, 35-millimeter camera, and then, you know, I got into developing. I built my own photos lab or whatever you call it. I was processing my own prints in my spare room with my wife. And I got married in 93, so yeah. And it was cool, you know, and I was into Photoshop, and then all of a sudden my mom was on my ass. Hey, you need to get your degree, you know? And I'm like, Mom, it's, you know? And so I said, all right. And so I enrolled I was on the 8-year program because I took some years off. And then because I was working full time, I could only take like two classes.
X amount of classes,
you know?
Yeah.
So I was slow playing it. But I enroll in their graphic design program, and they're teaching the old antiquated shit, the litho and all that. And I'm like, I'm having
outdated.
To draw, type, and I'm like, no, you know, I'm telling the instructors, no, you're doing a disservice to all these students. This is not
when they get
when
out
they
in
get
the,
out in the
when
real
they
world, they're gonna be lost.
Yeah.
You know, they're gonna be
ancient.
This is gonna pass them by. This what you're teaching, and so still button heads, you know, and finally that we had to spec out this. He wrote a sentence, and you had to draw it. You know, you had to draw it with your, you know, fine black pen. And I go back to Crower and I bang it out on the keyboard, print, laser printer. I take it to him. I show him. He's like, how'd you do this? Like, this is the future.
Yeah.
This is what you need to be teaching. You know, a lot of the instructors are tenured.
And they're not in the real world. So they only know what they know.
They're in a little education, you know,
bubble.
Yeah. They're in a little ecosystem education bubble. And so I pushed back though. I was like, you know, the grades weren't important. I just wanted to get my degree
something.
To get my mom off my back. But I wanted to, you know, and I really did. I was kind of like the other students were getting kind of jacked around, you know? And so I kept going up the food chain. And finally I got somebody that would listen. I was like, look, you need to come down to Crower and check out my setup. And he's like, all right. And
that might've been your second calling. Well, if it wasn't for engine parts.
So they go down, they come down and they're like, oh, this is cool. You know, what, can you help set us up our computer lab? And I was like, no problem. You know? And so, you know, got that thing going. You know, there was still a transition from the old guard, you know, and like I said, they're tenured. So a lot of them weren't doing it. But anyway, I graduated and got my mom off my back. And so I go down there and I'm laying out the catalog, and we were the first. It was 68 page catalog. We were the first in this industry to come out digital, all digital.
You saved a lot of backs.
It did.
Because I remember going to shows as a kid, and I was that kid that literally had the bag. And whatever catalog I saw, I grabbed.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it's like me going home with a volume of books.
Knowledge, right.
Thick. Everything was, you know, the heavy gloss paper. Those, each one of those catalogs, I couldn't even imagine how much it cost to print. And they were just giving those away to guys like me.
It was like back then, it was like $3.50.
You know what I mean? Guys like me, I'm just taking them home. I ain't buying shit. But fuck, I saw this cool catalog. I took it. I went home. Flip through it real quick. No, this ain't for me. But I did take it. And, you know, I watch older people. They're walking around with carts because it's so heavy.
Right.
By the time you're done with the
wagons.
Show. Yeah, you're you know, you have a thing full of catalogs. It's like, what am I doing with this? And then, yeah, later on, they started going to CDs. I remember grabbing CDs.
And then the internet came along and blew all that away.
Yeah, so definitely saw that progression.
So, yeah, so we did the whole catalog, and it was fun. I was, you know, I was on the cutting edge and having a good time. But I don't, like, CAM specs, it's a lot of data entry. And out of that 168-page catalog, probably 90 of them were CAM specs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was tedious data entry.
Whose job was that?
Mine. You know, my dad's like, you want to do it, you know? And so it was glamorized data entry is what I mean. And the print ads were cool. And we did some posters and, you know, just the whole learning, the whole process of editing in Photoshop. It was cool. But again, I need chaos. I was bored, you know,
yeah.
I had tackled that. And, you know, once you do the catalog once, there's only little updates
and changes,
you know, fixing typos and adding this and adding that. So there wasn't a lot of, you know.
I read after, you know, I was doing a little digging on you. You at one point you worked for IndyCar as a mechanic.
What was that?
How'd you get into that?
So me and my cousin Daniel, he kind of spearheaded it, and we went to. So IndyCar was always a sealed engine, a crate engine,
mm-hmm.
and then they had a split CART and IRL in the like 95, and IRL, which it was run by Tony George, who owned the Speedway here at the time, said, you we're going back to run what you brung with two engine platforms. So it was the Aurora and then the Oldsmobile Aurora and the Nissan Infiniti. And it wasn't sealed. You know, you could, a race team could take it to whoever they wanted and build the engine.
Oh, wow.
And so it was cool. It was back to the OG way of how they used to run races and, you know, wasn't a spec engine and all that. So Daniel and Bruce Crower was he was a legend at Indy, won it with Jim Rathman in the 60s as a crew member. And so Indy was kind of special to the Crower family and his son Daniel. And he kind of spearheaded doing some Oldsmobile stuff. And we got some cams in a car and they ran at Phoenix. And this is a little privateer team. And they're going again, you know, John Menard had big money. There were some big teams. And this little privateer team won the race.
Wow.
And, you know, it's crazy. And then you get the Menards team looking for cams. And Tony Stewart was driving at the time. And legendary engine builders, Sonny and Butch Myers. And so we start going to the races. And then, you know, since we're at the races, the little small team want to save some money. And they're like, hey, you guys want to change tires? And we're like, fuck yeah. You know, and I was always an athlete. And this was, I was
right
back in the
alley.
Game, you know. I mean, this car is driving. I'm left rear and I'm against the wall. And this car comes in and turns its nose right at me. At about 25 miles an hour, I mean, Sam Schmidt was the driver. I mean, I prayed every time that guy just turn right, dude, turn right, you know, and you know, we get it done in what seven seconds. That back then it was longer to fuel, so we had time. You know, it was one lug nut, so we had time. You know, so just don't panic. But it was cool, man. You know, you got your juices flowing.
How long did you do that for?
500. Well, I did it for a couple of years, and then. I got a call from my wife, and she's like, I had a six-year-old son, and she's like, Evan hit a home run. And I remember, like, damn, I didn't see it. So luckily it was kind of towards the end of the season, and I finished out, and then I just bailed.
That was it. But that was a cool experience.
It was cool. It was like I was getting back into athletics, you know, like sport, you know, and, it was cool. And so, yeah, that era was cool, and that was all going on with the Honda stuff too, and you know, the four cylinder stuff. And so yeah, that was a good time.
When people see BC now, what is it that about your company that stands out versus your competition?
Well, first off, we like to carry a lot of inventory. You know, in stock. I mean, nothing. It could be a $35 valve seal order, and I get pissed if we can't fill it. You know, and my guys are like, what? It's $35. I said, no, it's not just $35. It's 30. That guy bought
that
it from
guy
somewhere
needs it.
Else. And you know what? He might have had a good experience buying it from somebody else, and he never buys anything from us again. That's my mentality. Doesn't matter how much it costs. We need to fill. I mean, now you can't do it all the time, but you know your hot movers. And here's what I tell people. I say, nobody's ever called me and said, hey, I got a perfectly good running engine, but I want to put a Strucker kit in it. I've never got that call in all these years I've been doing it. But when they do blow up the engine, they don't want to hear 16 weeks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a good example is we demoed our kitchen and the contractor's like, hey, I'm not going to touch a thing until you get the last nut on your sink. But we had a perfectly good running, functioning kitchen. So for 6 months, we just used our old kitchen. And then when we got everything, you demoed it. And no problem, right? Well, you don't get that luxury when you're racing. You don't get to say, oh, you know, we'll wait till, you know, you got a blown engine. And
you wait 6 months, season's over.
It's over. You know, you're done, you know. And so that is what I think we bring to the table. And you know, that meshed with our partnership with CP, because if you ever go to their facility, go look at their inventory. It is massive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had the same philosophy. You know, a lot of companies now, especially some private equity companies, the first thing they cut is inventory.
Yeah.
Inventory and good
payroll. They want to run everything slim.
And the problem with that is they're running every 3 months. Every quarter they got to answer to somebody in New York. And this industry doesn't work on every 3 months.
Yeah.
It's a long-term relationship, a long-term process. And, you know, I mean, I'll look at monthly sales, but I try not to get locked into that, you know, because, you know, you could have a decent month and then have a really good month, you know, or have a slow month and then have a really good month, you know, but it's consistent. You know, we're growing. And so, yeah, I think inventory and, I mean, another thing is it's pretty simple. If somebody calls, call them back.
Customer service.
I got guys saying, hey, I've been trying to buy a crank from so-and-so and I've been a year. And I'm like, oh, you got a lot of patience. You know, I just couldn't imagine doing that.
Leaving someone
and
that.
And so, you know, a lot of it is I'm very customer service based. You know, I've had three jobs. My stepmom made me get a job at the mall. I wanted the job at the movies. You know, that was the cool job, right? But I couldn't get, they weren't hiring. And so I got a job at Miller's Outpost because I said, I know Levi's. I'm wearing Levi's right now. I know Levi's.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got hired. Well, I wasn't in the Levi department. They put me out front as the greeter. You know how that goes. When you walk in, you're like, hey
what's going help on?
You're
how
like,
you
no,
doing?
No, I'm just looking. Well, after about three or four of those, I come back and tell my boss or manager, I'm like, I don't want to be the greeter anymore. I want to be the Levi guy. She's like, I need a greeter. I said, so that's it? And she's like, that's it. And I said, I quit. I'm not a greeter. And so that was job one. And then job two, I worked in a restaurant. And it was at a hotel. And I did room service. What a cool gig, man. You get to roll up there, roll out a cart, and get tipped. Back then it was 15%. None of this 25% shit. I get 15%, and I don't even have to wait on them. But I learned kind of some customer service, and sometimes they'd be short in the dining area, wait staff, and so I'd work that. And I learned that, you know, I mean, the customer is not always right, but, you know, you
got it goes a long way. A little bit of kindness.
A little bit of finesse
and
you know, and a little bit of giving a shit is the thing. And so, I mean, you know, that's another thing is I care, we care, you know, and the guys I hire, they care because they see that I care, you know, and it's a trickle-down deal, you know, and you know, I mean, I'm if we're shorthanded, I'm out there packing spring kits.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have job titles.
I think you're a hands-on
every
owner.
Every man on deck, you know, and there is no job title or duty to for any one of us,
mm-hmm.
all, you know, and so, you know.
They're very hands-on.
That speaks a lot, too. Helps you, you know, I mean, I go out there and sometimes I'm packing springs. I'm like, hey, how come we're not putting
this
in
way.
There? And they're like, oh, yeah, you know. And so sometimes, you catch some things. And I'm not averse to grind, you know, to going out there. And I mean, I did that when I was 12.
I think that speaks a lot, too, because I think the first time I met you was probably at an H day. And, right. You know, like. Obviously, I know the brand. I've seen it in the magazines. This was back in...
Hell, we were title sponsor in, at H-Day.
Yeah, and this was back in E-Town days. So it's like...
Missed that place.
I get to see, you know, this brand, and then I go up, I'm talking to you, and, you know, you hand me your card, and I'm looking, I'm like, holy shit, this is the owner. This is Brian Crower. You know, not that it was unheard of, but it was just a little bit less the other boots... The owner of the company is not there, you know what I mean? And you're out there trying to push your product and, you know, show what you got. So I thought that was pretty impressive because at the end of the day, I'm just a young kid at the time, you know, looking at stuff I'm not buying anytime soon, but it's fucking cool because it makes power and you guys had cam gears. You know, that's the thing that you could see. So it's like, oh shit! Like, telling my boy, you gotta get these cam gears because you know, I forgot what color they were at the time, but
gold.
They were.
That's our color. Gold. And then we released the black gear.
You know what I mean? So
yeah, gold was.
I remember that like clearly. So that's pretty cool, and you still have that product to this day. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
no, I mean, yeah. Trust me, the last name opens doors. I got some daughters, and they're like, Dad, we want to run your TikTok account, you know? And I'm like, I got a certain look that I've kind of shepherded through this deal. And I still run all the Instagram. I still run, you know, anything we do, print or what, you know, Easy Up Design. That's me, you know? So, this is my baby, you know? And so I'm not ready to just hand it over to one of my kids. And you know, I used to, you know, Art.
Yes.
And Art had access to the Instagram account, you know, and he's posting, like, we travel to all the drift races, and so he'd post a picture of his watch at, like, 4:45 going to the airport on an Instagram post. I'm like, come on, man. That doesn't sell anything, you know? And so I changed the password. Didn't tell him.
But I'm logged out.
But still, I mean, that's how much – I mean, I'm not, like, a micromanager, but I have a look that I want, you know? Yeah. And whether it's box design or what goes in the box and how – you know, what I want is I want that Apple experience. When you get that iPhone, you're like, oh, the box.
Yeah,
and some people save the box. I used to have like 7 of them. Finally, what am I doing with these things?
You know, I don't know, but it just looked cool.
But they're cool, and that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted, you know. And so, I just you know, I have a certain look, and at some point I'm going to have to learn to just chill and let it go. Who knows better about the business and what it wants or what it needs and what we want to promote than me, you know? And I'm not saying that egotistically and, you know, with the last name and stuff, sometimes I say my last name if I need it. Most of the time I don't, because I don't really have a big ego. I don't like people like, I'm so-and-so, you know? Plus, if it's an older guy, they want to talk about the flathead Ford and all the old history. And, you know, I mean, I'm happy to do it if there's time, but there's no.
That's not your business.
We're just talking.
It's irrelevant, you know? At that point. Since you've been doing this for so long, what's been like? What's the one project that sticks out to you the most?
My biggest headache or problem was in 2019. I decided we wanted to get in the side by side market. You know, the Polaris's, the Can-Ams,
the UTVs,
the Yamahas, Yamaha YXZs. And so, you know,
and that's a big thing down out.
Me, I'm like, I'm not going to do one engine. I'm going to do XP1000, XP Turbo. That's the Polaris. I'm going to do the Can-Am. I'm going to do the Yamaha 998. I'm going to do the Talon, and I'm going to do a little bit of the Kawasaki Carax. Well, we make cranks for 3,500 horsepower 2Js, VR. I mean, Lambo crank. I mean, we have high horsepower builds, right? Our cranks are
pretty good.
Not pretty good.
Damn really good. Fucking good. Damn good.
Damn good. And so I'm like, yeah, we're gonna make cranks for these side-by-sides. Well, we make the Polaris. That's easy. This Can-Am has this snout on this thing, like this long. We make them out of 4340 and send it to the customers that were want it. Boom, they snap the snout off. At first, it was behind the timing chain, which means the valves go haywire and basically destroys the whole engine. We don't see that in a 2J or nothing, you know? So I'm stubborn, man. So I'm going to tackle this thing. So we change alloys. We go from 4340 to an EN40. And it was good up until it wasn't. And these side by sides, they're not, everybody says, oh, you're working on golf carts. I'm like, hey, dude, a 900 cc engine is making 700 horsepower. Now, times that by 8 cylinders, you would be bowing down with respect the amount of wheel horsepower you'd be making.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's over, I'm not good at math, but 5,000 plus. I mean, that's legit out of a V8. If you're making 5,500 out of an LS, I'd be like, respect, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what I look at. I tell people I'll make cams and whatever for a lawnmower if there's volume, but I'm platform agnostic. The only favorite I have is the B18A because that was the first engine I did. That's it, you know? And so this Can-Am, I'm like, okay, we change alloy. Okay, these, the hitters in the sand drag are running pneumatic clutches. So they're revving to 5,000 and then they launch. And then it's a CVT. So
it stays there.
It grabs the crank and now it's not snapping, it's twisting it. But it was twisting it in front of the timing chain now. So I wasn't hurting engines anymore, but still not a good look. You know, we don't sell cranks that break. I remember coming home and telling my wife, I think I'm going to pull the plug on this crank project. But again, I'm stubborn, you know, and so start thinking about it. And I'm looking at the snout and I'm like, you know, this is open space right here. So we increase the OD of the snout 80 thou, and then we have to undercut the timing chain gear so the chain doesn't dig into it. I sent it to my most gorilla tuning customer. Like, if it survives this
it'll
dude,
be good.
We're good all the way down. I mean, he's still running that crank. So we fixed the problem, you know? And so that was my biggest, like, hurdle. I'm lucky, you know? If I would have read the stats of 9 out of 10 small businesses fail when they start up, I probably wouldn't have left Crower.
Yeah.
You know? But I didn't know that. So we hit it off. We grew during the financial crisis in 08 and 09.
And that's kind of crazy, too.
So I got validated, I guess, you know, and this market was like bugging me, you know, and so finally we figured it out. And that market, even though it's five years old, I mean, it's 30% of our sales.
Yeah.
And I think Kelford came out with cams for the Can-Am, but we're first to market on this. Was I didn't have JDM to lean on. This was me out there. I'm waking up at 5 a.m. and I learned that there was websites where they had, they used to call it the microfiche, where you enter a part number and it tells you where it's used.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these side-by-sides, the engines were used in wave runners or jet skis, watercraft.
Mm-hmm.
And then sleds, snowmobiles.
Oh.
So I'm like, ooh, we can
cross.
We can cross over, you know, and it's starting to happen. And I heard the sled guys they're crazy. You know, they run those things on asphalt. I mean, now they're putting Hayabusas in them. I mean, this is nuts.
They go nuts.
And so, yeah, we had that kind of crossover and you know, everything's
You bring up the good. Hayabusa. You also do cranks for motorcycles.
We do. You know, it was funny. I was at World Cup Finals, right? And I know there's some bikes there, but...
Yeah, the Pro Street bikes.
But, you know, and I always like to have some different stuff at the show that's not... Or at the race that's... Not 2J or Honda K Series or VR, whatever, you know, Lambo. So I brought a Hayabusa crank. And this dude walks over and he's like, hey, Busa 1300? I'm like, yeah, what stroke? 72. Can I check it out? Picks up, looks at it. Can I buy this one? I was like, after the show. So I said, come back by after the show. I didn't think anything about it. Comes back to the show. How much you want for it? Said you pay cash, 1900. Calls me on Monday, wants to order Monday after the race. They want to order 20 of those. I mean, I didn't expect to sell Hayabusa cranks at World Cup Finals, but you never know. So yeah, we jumped into the Busa game, and now, you know, we brought Busa cranks here,
mm-hmm.
and CP has a really big Hayabusa following with their rods and pistons.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that association brought those guys over to our booth because we have an open concept booth with CP. And they're like, dude, I didn't know you were... Can you make a 68 millimeter? Yeah. How many you want? 10. Like, wow. It's a good market.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do the Busa stuff. And that's another, you know, that's another one.
I remember back in the day when I raced bikes, I was a good friend of mine, Dell. He, you know, the cranks back then was... This is back in like 05 when I started getting into it. If you needed a crankshaft back then, it was Marine
crankshaft. And Marine's still around, and they make a great product. I'm not the normal guy. I got friends in everywhere. Trent Manley's a friend. Heath Norton, who owns Cali's, is a friend. There's a big enough sandbox. I don't play a zero-sum game. There's a big enough sandbox. And like I said before, if I thought I can have all the 2J customers, I'm going to piss a lot of people off. So, yeah.
I think that's a good perspective for you, too. For people that don't know you, you're basically a team player. Whether it's competition, whether it's whoever is not, I've never heard you badmouth anybody. I never heard you, you know, talk shit like, oh, like those guys, you know, their shit sucks. My shit's better. It's just, hey, this is what I offer. Take it or leave it, right? Just play, you know, and like you said.
Because you get it. You know what my answer is when people walk up and they're like, why are your cams better than Brand X? I'm like, well, first off, they're not here. So,
yeah,
you know.
Simple answers.
But I'm not going to say buy our cam and that cam sucks. I don't need to tear another company down to.
Never seen you do that.
We're going to out hustle them. I mean, I'm going to out market them. I'm going to out hustle them. And, you know, we could have similar products, but because of that hustle and marketing, you know, maybe we get the edge.
You get that little sale. Right. You get an additional sale out of that. Yeah, I think that speaks volumes. Again, I think by you going to the shows, you're not only the owner of the company, you're at the shows, you're talking to the customers, you're dealing with them firsthand. I think that just makes that relationship a little stronger. It makes that customer feel a little bit more relatable to you and the brand. I think that really helps a lot.
Yeah, and again, like I was talking about my daughters and the TikTok thing, I'm still kind of a control freak. Like I said, I don't make, my guys have autonomy. If a customer has a problem, they can fix it. They don't have to come to me. I trust them. But yeah, I mean, and I'm getting a little better at like letting some, I mean, because I want to travel. I mean,
I want to chill. You know, I want to enjoy yourself a little bit.
My 16-year-old, she's my last kid, so I don't want to be on the road all the time. So I'm getting better at letting my other guys go and trusting the process.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
So that helps, and it makes my wife happy. You know, yeah. So that although she knows the races are, that's work. You know,
it's important.
I mean, my shortest day is at a racetrack. You know, we get there at 7, and all of a sudden, you know, Dustin's like, hey, dude, 6 o'clock.
I'm We're
like,
out.
Damn. You know, I mean, that's just lightning fast.
Yeah,
because
back
you know?
Home,
and,
you'd be working
but I'm
till...
I'm a pig and shit at the race. I mean, this is like...
This is fun.
This is cool, except for the oil downs and all shit we experienced at World Cup. But, yeah. You know, that's a different deal.
What's the latest and greatest that's going to come out of BC, CP Carrillo?
You know, again, you know, got into the JDM market, got into the side-by-side market. Out of respect for the family business, I never entered the domestic V8 market, but you know, my buddies at ARP, you know, Pack Spring, you know, we had a conversation with Pack Springs, and he's like, it's a bad month if we don't sell 25,000 LS valve springs. ARP's like, dude, it's our number one product by far, head studs for an LS, and they're telling me you got to get into it.
Getting the signs from everywhere,
you know, and they start doing it in drifting. They're using it in drifting.
Yeah,
and honestly, if you want to make 400 or 500 horsepower, It's the platform to use. I have a 1990 Grand Wagoneer. It had this piece of shit AMC 248 in it. Couldn't even get on the freeway at 65. So I was like, I'm gonna put LS in it. I should have put a Gen 3 Hemi in it, but doing that's a little more complicated. And so, yeah. So it, you know, it's basically the LS is the 2J of the sport comp, of the domestic side. So you know, do we do it? You know. The piston deal is funny because we've used every flavor of pistons, and I never burn a bridge because you never know. At one point, CP did get it into 16-week lead times, and that's kind of hard to manage. And you know, so but we always came back to them. And like you said, we had that past relationship with Barry and Snake, and so they were always kind of our default. If somebody didn't ask for a brand that we, you know, we'd sell JE, we'd sell. We could sell white. I mean, we're deep with all of them. If they didn't ask brand specific, they got CP pistons. And you know what? We never got a phone call back saying, why'd you send me these? It sells itself. The quality that they have. I mean, if you're ever in Irvine, go into their place. It's impressive. The engineering, the QC, the inventory, the people, it's top shelf. You know, and so why wouldn't I want to hitch my wagon to that?
Yeah.
And so, okay, we're going to enter the domestic market, but I keep hearing, hey, high-end cranks are, you know, there's some issues going on. There's, you know, we can't get them. And I'm talking
supply
like,
issues.
Just, yeah, and different dynamics in certain companies and things change. People die. Family takes over. Not the same philosophy. And so that's happening in a few places. And so we're like, not only are we going to get in the domestic market, we're going to get in the high-end domestic market. And I'm talking 3,500 horsepower Coyotes, 5,500 horsepower ProMods with Pro Chargers. And then we got the Holy Grail. I got five cranks going for Ron Capps Racing for Top Fuel.
Wow.
And my philosophy on that is, because a lot of people are like, no, dude, don't get into that. That's I mean, they think 8 to 12 passes on a crank is good. That's how violent. I mean, these things are bombs on wheels. And I'm like, no. I mean, if we want to, you know, say we're here, we need to be here. And what why I want to do it is you know, guys are like, hey, you know, why should I run your crank? Well, I don't know. Ron Capps is running them, and he's making 13,000 horsepower. How much are you making? Well, I'm making 1,200. I think we're good, right? So it's a win on Sunday, sell on Monday mentality. If we're going to get in the domestic market,
you're basically
I was confident, but I wasn't 100% confident that we could enter that market and gain traction. You know, there's still a lot of players, and you know, we're new, and yeah, I got the right last name, but it's different, and so. You know, I'm talking to Snake about something, and he's like, hey, why don't we tag team it? You know, and I was like, say more, you know, lay it on me. And he's like, yeah, man, we'll help you get into that domestic scene. And you know, we want you to do these certain rods for these bikes. And you know, I'm like, you know, they wanted me to do stuff for them that I didn't even plan on doing,
right.
You know, and I'm like, that's a win-win, you know? I mean, I get their muscle, their credibility behind me, and they get what they want. And so I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And so we're in the big,
you're pretty much covering every segment of motorsport car.
I think we're the only company that does domestic cranks, sport compact cranks, and side-by-side cranks. Now, I throw side-by-side in because that guarantees that we're the only one doing it because nobody's making side-by-side cranks. So I don't know if there's anybody else that has that versatility to do all of those things. My problem is I keep taking, like, I like new shit, you know, like I said, I like chaos, you know? And so if a guy wants to make five cranks and we haven't made it, I'm like, yeah, we can do it as long as you can wait 24 weeks. But that slows down our bread and butter shit. And so I got to learn to hold back and not be everything to everyone. And so, you know, we're at this show, we're at the PRI show in 2025 with CP Carrillo, and we're introducing our whole line of Coyote, big block Chevy, small block Chevy, and LS. And the past 2 days, my expectations were here, and we're here, you know, and I am thrilled at
the
synergy that we have
the
with
reception
them, you know,
that you're getting
it's like
crowd,
you know,
and
I mean, you know, their CP, you know, guy comes up talking to about pistons or Carrillo rods, and like, hey, what about cranks? And like, hey, come over here,
right,
and it's
there.
Like, one-stop wow, this
shop.
Is like peanut butter and jelly, you know. And so, you know, CP's happy. I mean, it's a dream scenario for me, and not in a million years did I think my little brand that I started out of the garage 20 years ago would be associated with not only CP Carrillo, but their parent company is Pankel. And Pankel does all the F1 rods, all the NASCAR rods, all the IndyCar. I mean, maybe not all, but if you're doing F1,
it's a pinnacle of motorsport.
I get up, I watch that shit live, you know? And I mean, we have a banner on our aisle, and there's this logo, and then there's Pankel. And I'm just like, take a picture. I'm like, you know, and you know, my relationship was CP Carrillo, not Pankel, but just to be in that same, you know,
in the same
that
realm.
same picture. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, I pat myself on the back on that.
That's
one.
Good,
you know,
man.
So yeah, what's new is domestic, and like I said, if that goes smooth, we'll look at something else. And, you know, we got into the Euro scene with the B58 through the Supra. We weren't BMW guys, but. Now the S58 came out, so wow, that took off fast.
Yeah.
So why not do an M50 kit? Why not do an S55 kit? Why not do an N54 kit? So we're doing Euro stuff. I don't know if we'll get all into the cams. I don't know, but yeah, I think I'm trying to stay in my lane,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't want to spread out. We did a lot of stuff with we made an exclusive intercooler for the Polaris with Garrett Turbo, working directly with them. You know, but I need to start like focusing on cranks, rods, cams, Valtrin.
Where you started from.
What I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And whatever engine that is kind of irrelevant, but I think we've got enough on our plate to keep me in chaos for
a little bit.
For a little bit, you know? And I'm, you know, people, I say, when are you going to retire? And I say, dude, or what do you do for work? And I say, dude, I don't work. People call me and give me money to make them go fast. This is a happy conversation. You know, they're not like, fuck, I got to give you my credit card. You know, I'm not selling insurance. I'm not cold calling people. They're calling us. And it's a good time, you know, and to be able to do that, you know, I'm not going to retire. I don't golf. I don't drink. I don't gamble. This is my gig. You know, this is my jam. This is, like I said, my fastest day is at the track. You know, talking shop and you know, just getting down to like let's make some horsepower.
You mentioned before too, just real quick, private equity. That's been a big thing in our industry, in the motorsports industry for quite some time now. What's your take on that? And where did you think that rooted from? Like, what made a banker, I mean, or whoever?
You know, when it first started happening, it was kind of like, okay, it makes sense. You know, I see it. You know, where you have synergy and having two or three piston companies, you know, forgings and wrist pins. And, you know, there's economies of scale you can get out of building brands. But then, you know, it gets kind of private. Like we said earlier, private equity lives every 3 months. This industry can't operate every 3 months. I mean, my accountants hate me because I carry so much inventory. And you never know the runs, or, you know, you might think you got everything under control in terms of your inventory counts, but you miss it, you know? And so private equity, I mean, I don't want to talk shit on any brand. So I'm just going to say, I'll leave it at this. I will not sell to private equity.
That was my next question. So,
like I said, I'm walking down the aisle, and the dude's like, hey, can you build Briggs and Stratton cranks? And I'm like, how many? He's like, 100. I'm like, done. I didn't have to go up the food chain. And you know, I mean, that one of our advantages is we're nimble. You know, if Dustin comes to me and says, hey, I'm getting a lot of calls on this. Well, guess what? We're making it. There's no committee and, you know, give me a flow chart and a PowerPoint presentation and Zoom meetings with people that don't even know what the fuck we're talking about, you know, but they count the money. And so, yeah, I mean, and I hope it fixes itself because there's some good brands in some of these portfolios
that get swallowed up.
And it's sad, you know, because I grew up with those brands and I respect those brands and I wish the best for all, even if they're a competitor. I want them to succeed because this industry, you know, it thrives on competition. And again, I'm a team player and you know, we work with a lot of other brands and you know, and I'm like, when we've gotten the side-by-side stuff, all of the headsets were custom. I brought every engine up to ARP. I drove it up to Ventura, dropped them all off. I said, I need this, 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 and this. And, you know, I tell ARP, I need exclusive, you know, I need you to protect me. So we use our own part numbers because I know what would happen, and it happened in one Polaris part number. And I'm not going to name the mail order, but they're selling like those head studs for like 10% above cost. I'm not going to do all that work and get kneecapped, you know, by the mail order guys. So yeah, you know, and ARP is gracious enough to do that for me, you know, and that's the relationship that we try and build. And you know, I, and people are like, hey, why are you, if they're your head studs, why aren't you selling them as BC head studs? And I'm like,
I'm not a head
am I a head stud guy? No, exactly. I'm a cam guy. I'm an engine, you know, ARP is the stud and bolt company, you know? And so of course I'm going to use ARP. That's what you're buying. And that's what I want to stand behind. You know, people are like, well, why don't you put your logo in the CP pistons? I'm
no
like,
need.
Cause it's CP pistons.
No need.
That's their piston. Yeah. It's my rod. It's my crank. My logo's on that, but I don't have a big ego and you know, I want to push my partners.
You use what works.
We use what works, and you know, and I'm proud of my relationships with other companies, and you know, I mean, like I said, we're working with Garrett. I mean, we work with ACL, King. I mean, we work with industry titans in this industry, and you know, I pride myself on delivering for them. You know, I mean, you can, everybody, oh, this is going to be, we get calls all the time. Oh, you should make jams for this. It's really popular. I'm like, dude, I haven't got any calls on whatever what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it's, you know, and it works both ways. You know, ARP might call me, hey, we're having, it happened. You know, they're like, hey, we got a little issue with this head stud for the Lambo. You know anybody? And I'm like, yeah, I know T1. I'll call Tony. He's like, oh, you know, if you do this, this, and this, it's good. And ARP is appreciative of that. Yeah. You know?
That info is sometimes is invaluable.
Right.
You know, sometimes, like, because they're not around it, you know, to be able to make, you know, a few phone calls and get the answer to your questions on something that would, you know, a normal person would take a very long time to find the right answer, and even an answer, period, is, you know, you can't put a price to that.
No, it's I mean, it's another cliche, but it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
And those relationships are important. And I have relationships in this industry that span 40 years. I mean, I when I was the ad guy, this was back in the magazine days, so I'm 19 years old. I'm hanging with the Peterson Publishing, the Hot Rods, the Car Crafts, you know, the Super Streets, you know, all those magazines. And I'm 19 and we're going to SEMA and, you know, we're going to the titty clubs and they're spending a shitload of money. And I'm like, woo, I'm 19 years old and
I'm in heaven.
And I'm getting paid for this. Wow. You know? And so that's, it's, over all the years, you know, I try not to burn bridges and I can't, I'm trying to think of one company that I said that I've told I will never, ever use your shit again. I can't, it doesn't come to mind. So, and I've had issues and my thing is like, look, if I have a problem, I just stop ordering from you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to send you an email or whatever. I just move on to somebody else that's going
to satisfy
what we're looking for, you know? And I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm not a hard ass. I'm not expecting, you know, all this, but I want you to be honest with your lead times. When I call you and you say, hey, how long are we? What are we looking at? And you tell me 2 weeks. I know you're just telling me that 2 weeks to get me off the phone. So be honest. One thing I learned really early selling this stuff is don't lie on lead times. You know, I wanted to lie on lead times. Like you say, hey, it's going to be 16 weeks. Oh, I can't wait 16 weeks. Oh, I'll get it done for you in 8, trying to get the sale, right? Well, 8 weeks come along, and who's the asshole? Me.
Yep.
And I learned early on, hey, if you tell them 16 weeks and you get it done in 14, you're the hero. If it's the other way around, you're the asshole. And so that's all the customer wants. He can work around an honest lead time. And like I said, I overshoot. I'm telling people here 20 weeks, but I know we can get it done in 13, you know? I mean, that's going to gain, you know, they'll get the product. I'm assuming they're going to love it, but the lead time is going to get me that. Not only is the quality good, but the lead times were accurate or better.
Yeah.
And that's...
under promise, over deliver.
Another cliche, but again, they're cliches because
it works.
They works, you know?
Throughout the years, obviously, you sponsor a lot of... you're big into sponsorship. How do you feel that helps your business? I'm talking about sponsorship, you know, not only in events,
another cliche,
but also,
win on Sunday, sell on Monday.
Yeah.
That's what old Ford's saying, and I believe in that, you know? You know, and you can, you know, it's a lot of, like, it's hard to gauge ROI. You know, you put money here and you're like, yeah, I got a lot of good questions. But I'm not like, hey, where'd you hear about us? You know, I don't want to be intrusive like that. It's just like, hey, you're calling. Let's do business. You know, I don't want surveys or any of that shit. So, you know, so you sponsor certain, I mean, when we started in 06, we went to every drift race, every Formula D drift race. For up until COVID, 2019. And it's funny because, you know, there was no racing in 2020, and that was our best year. You know, 2021 was our best year because everybody got free money, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody's wallet was fat. And we were kind of thinking like, wow, our sales are up and we didn't go to any, you know, we didn't go to anything.
maybe we should
So it was kind of like, you know, let's start picking our battles. And so, you know, we do FD, but... fortunately, they have two Long Beaches now, which is 2 hours from us.
Right.
But, you know, we go to Texas 2K. We're the title sponsor for FL 2K at Bradenton with Vic and World Cup Finals, you know, and that's our drag market. And then, you know, we're talking to, you know, like Orlando Speedway, talking to them, you know, and we you know, you want to get out there more. And, And, you know, you never know, but I'll give you, so the mindset's always sponsor the racers, right? Guys racing. And
what you do?
I mean, 3 years ago, this dude hits me up and he's like, hey, I got to, he didn't start out that way, but those conversations this way, but he led into, you know, gave me some of his background and he says, I have a really big social media following, but he wasn't a racer, you know? And it was Adam LZ. And I go to his Instagram, it's in the millions. I go to his YouTube, millions.
Millions.
I'm like, interesting. We've never sponsored an influencer, right? But we talked here at the show, you know, we had dinner one night and we talked for like 4 hours. I was picking his brain on like, what camera you use for, you know, just, we were just shooting the shit. And there was no like sell. He wasn't selling himself. I wasn't selling us. But we just clicked, you know? And so I said, yeah, we're going to sponsor you. Dude, that, I could gauge that ROI, you know? I mean, right. that was post on Tuesday, sell on Wednesday. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. He was that influential.
Yeah.
And, you might, it's hit and miss. But, yeah, that was kind of an eye-opener of like, okay, they don't, you know.
The market has changed.
Market has changed.
You know
and if you don't adapt, you'll die.
Yep.
You know, and that's pretty basic in any business. And like I said, I'm not going to retire, and we plan to be around for a while. Once we get this domestic thing all smooth, I'll find something else to create chaos in my life and we'll move on, you know. But I'm 2026 is I feel it's going to be a good year. We're going to have low interest rates. We're going to have low fuel prices. You know, the economy is going to turn around. The EPA is off our ass, which is huge.
Yep.
That scared a lot of people, you know, and that put a damper on a lot of the, you know, there was a lot of like
unknowns,
and they made examples of some people and it mm-hmm. cost them a lot of money, especially the diesel guys, you know, I don't think our little high horsepower engines are going to destroy the world.
No,
I'm not a climate change believer, but you know, to each his own. And I don't think we should throw shit in the ocean take it for granted, but I don't think
racing
is going to, you know,
end
do anything, you know,
no.
I mean, global warming or whatever you want to think. So, I'm a big believer in coming up is going to be. And so, you know, with the interest rates down, that credit card rates go lower. And so we'll have that inventory when people are ready to spend.
Awesome. Listen, Brian, I appreciate you taking the time to talk about this new partnership, but just, you know, even getting on a podcast, you know, it's been a long time coming. Appreciate you, you know, just taking the time out of your day. I know you're very busy, you know, just to try to get you on a podcast. Glad it all worked out. You know, you've been friends of ours for a very long time. And, you know, we've been able for the people that don't know you, put a name to the face and also to the company of, you know, products that they probably have in their cars, you know.
No,
or whatever they drive.
When you told me yesterday, hey, it's going to be an hour. I was like, damn, what are we going to talk about? What time is it?
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, an hour and a half. All right. Well, so, I mean, if we needed to go two, we could keep going, but
I got to go sell
some cranks in the booth,
you
know?
We need to make sure you get those, the crank sales going, especially on all the new stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I passed by the booth. Everyone has questions. You know, I wish you the best of luck. I know you're going to kill it, so.
Thanks. You know, thanks, Hugo.
We're just going to see
I appreciate the opportunity to get on here and talk to you and, you know, just get the word out. And, you know, you look at new ways to gain ROI. And obviously this is podcasting is a big one. And it's one way to be in a relaxed setting and, you know, just shoot the shit. It's basically
talk
what
about,
we're doing.
Yeah, just right. Talk about what we do.
Talk about what
you
do.
Love to do.
It's simple.
All right, Brian. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks, Hugo. Appreciate
Follow
it.
Follow us on Instagram. Make sure you like, share, and comment on the podcast. Hugo ESR. What's your
Brian
Instagrams?
Oh, RunBC.
RunBC. Thanks for listening.